Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the Vex on Vex podcast, episode number 36. My name is VexX. I'm your host and joined today with the artist formerly known as Mike, now going under the name of Magnus.
Yeah.
Hi, Magnus.
Hello.
You're legally changing the name, is that correct?
Correct.
How excited are we about that?
Meh.
Meh?
No, I'm actually extremely excited.
Because the adjective of meh gave me this impression that perhaps, sir, you were not.
No, I like the idea. I'm kind of enthralled with it.
Really?
But my name originally is a very family-based name.
Understood.
I'm named after my father, which kind of caused a lot of controversy with my grandfather.
Interesting. Why was that?
I was supposed to be named James after him.
Oh, okay.
That was the agreement. But my father felt since he wasn't the firstborn son and that his older brother hadn't had any kids yet, it wasn't his responsibility to name his firstborn son after his father.
But your grandfather didn't take it out on you, did he?
Yes.
That's an interestingly bizarre thing. Old school, actually.
A little bit. Yeah, very. My father's father, very old school Italian, firstborn here in Philadelphia from Italy. Like, my great-grandmother, his mother, probably been here for about 2 years when he was born.
Now, for those of you listening to episode number 36 of the Vex on Vex podcast, Magnus, the artist formerly known as Mike, has actually appeared with us several times.
Yes.
And you've been in a couple of shows. And it got to the point where my bass player in Starscream, our bass player, Skip, said, "So is Mike your official co-host now?"
Oh.
And I was like, no, it's not that heavy,
you know.
But we do enjoy having conversations together.
Yes.
And that's kind of what it comes down to. And we were talking off microphone, which, by the way, is the evil. Like, I can't spend time with my podcast guests because it fucks everything up.
Right.
So we went to lunch together because I was starving
yeah.
after band practice today. And
subsequently inhaled a sandwich and some fries.
In like 4 seconds.
Correct.
Man. Like, I was starving. It's December the 2nd.
Right.
It's Sunday. The Eagles did not play today. I'm an avid Eagles fan. They play Monday Night Football. So we're podcasting together,
right.
Which is awesome. And the fucking former president, number 40, was it number 41 or is it
41, I believe he was.
Let's do math. So 41, 42 would be Clinton.
Clinton.
43 is his son.
Correct.
44,
two terms.
Yeah. And then 44 is Obama, also two
right.
terms. And now we have the guy now. So
45.
Yes, President 41, Bush Sr., as we have been referring to him in the press recently. Cause
right.
he's not, but the other one's not really a junior either.
No, they're two different middle.
Herbert, George
yes,
Herbert Bush.
Yeah. Herbert Walker and then Herbert Bush.
That's it. So
correct.
Herbert Walker died? Or Herbert?
Yes, Herbert Walker. He was senior.
So senior's dead?
Correct.
What are your thoughts on this?
Mixed.
Explain.
One, I'm not a politically affiliated person.
Understood.
In that way, either right or left. I'm actually, as for the most of the country, I'm an independent.
Sure.
So moving on from that, he got us into the first Gulf War for obvious reasons. We didn't really have a choice in that matter.
But that radically affected your life.
Correct.
Okay.
It literally changed my life forever.
Forever.
Right. I went from being this naive little skater metalhead in Northeast Philly to being a soldier in a short period of time.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Like, literally went from being goofball, riding around on the skateboard, riding around with my friends, going to the races, hanging out at the mall, to basic training.
When you signed up,
yes,
we weren't having the cloud of conflict over top of us.
No, it was that whole entire conflict over in the Middle East, when Iraq invaded Kuwait City, that was out of the blue. We had no idea it was coming, just happened. And
so
we
how far out of basic were you when the shit hit the fan?
I was in AIT, which was
so
I was
literally
out of, I was out of basic training.
And you're in your second peer training.
Correct. I'm in my job training, my
But
MLS
you're not
training.
Even an active soldier, really, because you go right
technically,
from...
Technically, I was.
But you go from basic right to this.
Correct. Nothing changes. Your barracks don't change.
Yeah, yeah.
Your drill sergeants don't change. The only thing is you're officially a soldier at that point
but in
when
your
you're
mind,
graduating.
In your mind, it didn't feel like that at all, I'm sure.
No. Well, there's the mental notification in that diploma, quote unquote,
sure.
that says you're now a soldier. Your drill sergeant told you you're graduating basic training. This is a graduation ceremony. You are now officially a soldier. He's like, you're like a step away from being an infantryman.
Oh shit!
So you have all the basic skills of every soldier needs: how to operate all of your equipment, how to be physically fit, and how to take orders, how to give orders, and everything like that. But you haven't learned your job yet.
Okay, understood.
So then I went into my AIT, Advanced Individual Training,
okay.
which was as a chemical specialist for the military, known as a 54 Bravo or 54B, whatever you want to call it. So I did that. So I dealt with nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. My main area of expertise was reconnaissance and not deployment, but what's the word I'm looking for? Disintegration.
Okay.
We had this turbine truck that you would put whatever you wanted into in it, and then you would start the turbine up, and it would burn everything off at like 3,800 degrees.
That's disturbing, sir.
It was beautiful. I loved it. Freaking glorious.
Well, I'm glad you loved it. So I guess my point that I'm trying to get to, or where I'm going, is this president's passed away.
Correct.
His political affiliation and his decisions affected your life.
Correct.
The man has now left the planet Earth. Now, he was in his 90s. It was a very full life.
94.
His wife sadly passed away pretty recently.
Yes.
Again, how do you feel personally about the loss of this president?
He did run. I mean, he was vice president to Reagan.
For 8 years.
Right. And Reagan changed our world.
Most definitely.
And that's why he got into the presidency. But for me, having met him when I was over there was pretty surreal. I was in a briefing with literally General Norman Schwarzkopf and his cadre of people, and I'm sitting in the back of the room, and I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I'm like, I look over my shoulder, and there's a CIA Secret Service agent, or a Secret Service agent standing there going, excuse me, specialist, I need to get through here.
Jesus Christ.
And I was like, oh, and I look over his shoulder, and there's HW standing there.
You're lying.
No.
In fatigues, literally.
Like, well, I mean, casual looking. He wasn't in like, yes, so, every one of them. But you could tell he was Secret Service,
but
without
if you're,
a doubt.
But if you're in a war zone, right. I guess the rule of thumb would dictate that you'd have to be in some kind of
correct
uniform.
Nowadays, not so much. We have operating bases over in Saudi Arabia and different areas around the Gulf that are basically little cities. So you can go out, like, currently our president could go over there and just be in regular street clothes if he wanted to. But
well, as the commander-in-chief, though, technically, you can kind of do whatever the fuck you want, can't you?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
But, I mean, Bush Sr., he was Air Force, I believe. Prior Air Force during the Vietnam
War.
Yo,
it's even better than that. Who is the great... I'm not a huge baseball fan.
Right.
You might help me. If not, we can Google it real quick. Who's the greatest hitter in the history of baseball? Do you remember his name?
Babe Ruth.
No, the guy who froze his head.
I have no idea.
He had the perfect swing. All right. We're going to pause you, Facebook audience. All right. And I'll be right back. Okay. Now, occasionally, I listen back to the audio programs of our podcast. Mm-hmm. And whenever I say to the audience, oh, hold on. It's a seamless transition for them. For you and I, it was like several minutes.
Yeah, it was like three days. It's now Wednesday.
Yeah. So we go to Timmy. We're like, Timmy, who's the baseball player who froze his head? And Timmy's like, Ted Williams. And we're like, it is Ted Williams. And then we Google Ted Williams. Read it. So Ted Williams,
yes,
arguably, they say, and I am not a baseball aficionado in any capacity,
neither
had the perfect swing.
Okay.
He was also a flight pilot, or I'm sorry, bomber pilot in World War II, and George Herbert Bush fucking served with him.
Wow.
And Ted Williams was like a rock star.
Yeah.
Because...
I've heard the name before. I don't think I've ever really heard much about
him. But you know how Joe DiMaggio, you say that name?
Yeah, it's like one of the names you say when what you call it, you're thinking of the old players, and that comes up.
So Ted Williams is the greatest fucking swinger, they say. I'm sorry, the perfect swing ever. Hitter, right. Ever. And Bush fucking served with him. And I remember seeing the documentary on Ted Williams on HBO not too long ago, actually.
Right.
And Bush is all giddy. Like, this guy was the head of the CIA. Right. There's a theory that he was in Dallas the day that fucking JFK got assassinated. Like,
yes.
Bush was integral in the last 50 years, 40 years, of politics spanning the globe at the end of the 20th century.
Right.
And this guy's like, oh my God, Ted Williams. And I have this affinity in my heart. The fucking Simpsons had a George Bush episode. Do you remember this?
No, I don't remember.
So he moves like next door to the Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that one. He's writing his memoirs and stuff. It turns into like a Dennis the Menace-esque episode.
He's Mr. Wilson.
Right.
And then him and Homer get into it. Mm-hmm. And then Homer's like, I'm going to knock you out, Bush. And he's like, I was head of the CIA. And he pulls a choker thing out of his watch. And he's gonna fuck up.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
And then he moves away, and then fucking President Ford moves in, and him and Homer are like, "Duh!" They fall at the same time. Like, I like you, Homer. He's like, I like you too, President. But anyway, I have this affinity for him for that. Now,
right. He
got beat by a very charismatic fucking, well, I don't know, man. Clinton has a definite checkered past in 2018 than in what he did. But
yeah.
he's thought of as a phenomenal president for his time. a lot of the economic things that were set up by Bush Sr.,
right,
Clinton got credit for.
Correct.
He was in office when they come to fruition. I say this because if you're an economist personally, and I am not an economist,
right,
I'm a musician and a fucking roofer, I despise Reaganomics. I didn't like it conceptually. Trickle-down theory doesn't work for me.
Nah,
I just don't like
me
it.
Me either.
And Bush put an end to a lot of that, and he transitioned it, and he made it modernized. And then in 94, 95, 96, when the country's thriving,
right,
it's because of Sr.
Correct.
And so Clinton got a lot of that credit. So I always felt bad about that. And then, I don't know, man. I liked Bush Sr., sincerely.
Like, I did too.
He wasn't, he threw up in Japan. Do you remember that?
No.
It was like world news. And so the president went over, and he was an older gentleman, and they fucked up his medication because he was like transitioning. And he's given a thing, and he fucking puked. And it was on TV around the world. And he like puked into the fucking like dignitary from Japan's lap. It was like a gnarly situation.
I think that was probably while I was out of commission working like 7 jobs a week.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, so
but it was just a big world news thing, and I felt bad about it, and that kind of like fucked him up for his reelection. But overall, good president, sincerely. And,
right.
And I think he did. All right, it's weird. Now, we can discuss this. Your boots were on the ground.
Correct.
The theory is that when he was there, and the military was there, and Schwarzkopf was there, and you were there,
right,
they should have continued and knocked over Iran.
Correct.
And crushed the whole fucking thing and just colonized it.
Well, if Iran would have been a hard push.
At the time,
but
sure,
we could have easily just went right in there and done whatever we wanted back in the early 90s.
Because you were well-armed.
We outmanned and outgunned them severely.
Like tenfold.
Correct. There was one conflict that I was in when I was over there. We were ambushed. We were helicoptered into a convoy, dropped off, and we joined up with some Marines and some Army Recon. My squad was chemical recon. That's what we did. We were in charge of going into a into an area and finding out what type of chemical munitions and chemical stores and biological and nuclear stores they had to see what they were doing. So I'm familiar with all the equipment to figure out how to make that happen.
Sure.
And familiar with all the international, what you call it, container policies for all the different types of chemical agents and biological agents that are out there. So we're going in. We get ambushed. We get ambushed from the back and both sides and the front at the same time. We got the one side, which would be the passenger side, under control quickly because there wasn't that many of them. But the driver's side of the convoy had the most amount of people in it.
What vehicles are we talking about? Was there at least a
deuce
tank?
Deuce and a half, two deuce and a halfs, an M113 personnel carrier. Two of those.
Were you in the personnel carrier?
I was in a Humvee.
Because the personnel carrier is technically the most dangerous in that scenario, is it not? No, I'm asking the question.
Kind of, yeah. It draws the most fire immediately.
Immediately, right? That's
correct.
Who they go after. So
correct.
If you're in that convoy, you don't want to be in that personnel carrier.
Correct. But I was in one of the Humvees. We had 6 people in my squad and 2 full-time drivers. So the 2 Humvees at the rear of the column were our Humvees. So we're at the back of the column, and the Marines and the Marine Recon Army Rangers are in front of us.
Sure.
And we're the techs. So all you ever hear when a conflict starts is all of them yelling, protect the techs, protect the techs, protect the techs. They're pinned down. I'm behind a Humvee tire, and there's rounds coming on either side of me. I become Spider-Man, climb the side of the Humvee, get into the open passenger door, and get up into the 50.
Fuck.
And
that's a war story.
And liberated us from that conflict in
50
one
cal,
in one fail swoop. Correct.
So let's be, I know you probably can't recall this. Did it take more than 15 fucking shots for them to fucking lay down and run like fuck? Because you hit one of them hits you, it just opens you up like a fucking pinata.
280.
You had that many?
I had.
What was the recoil like?
There is none. It's
because it's mounted.
It's mounted on the top of the Humvee in a turret.
No shit.
Yeah. So you sit in it and you spin.
Did you know? This is so bizarre. Remember the movie Tucker? It's that film where they make the automobile.
With the helicopter engine.
Well, here's the interesting part. The reason the gentleman Tucker had his money
right.
is he developed a turret for the military back then.
Oh.
So there's a good chance the engineering that went into the Tucker motor vehicle was
the same
engineering that you, because the turret was a big deal.
Oh, wow.
Especially in World War II. You know
right.
I mean? By the time you had it, it's 40 years after the fact, or actually 50 years after the fact. But
right.
still, you know what I'm saying.
That turret that you're speaking of was originally put into the deuce and a half.
Okay.
The cab of the deuce and a half, they cut that out and put a turret on top of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's probably what you're talking about right there. That was the first vehicle that they ever put any type of turret on besides tanks.
And then, I don't know if you remember this, but during that World War II conflict, there's no jets.
Right.
And they had to make a chain system for the turrets that were in the fucking the planes.
Right.
So you wouldn't shoot through your own propellers.
Correct. It was a whole timing thing.
Pretty amazing.
Set up.
Well,
yes.
No, it was a chain, so you couldn't fuck it up. Like, and the fucking chain were like, oh, we're hitting the propeller, stop, stop, stop. And then the bullets are coming out again, which I thought was fucking amazing. But
wow.
At any rate, you're fucking shooting 280 fucking 50 caliber bullets.
Right.
Fuck.
Well, there was vehicles and personnel.
You know that we've gone down a rabbit hole. I'm like, what'd you think of George Bush?
Right.
And you're
so
like,
let's go
I had a 50 cal, motherfucker.
Let's get back to George Bush. So anyway, CIA guy is standing over my shoulder, or Secret Service guy standing over my shoulder going, specialist, please move.
Sure.
And I was like, yes, sir. And I moved out of the way, and here comes HW walking past me to go.
He's
up
gigantic,
to the,
right?
Yeah, he's like 6 foot something.
He was big.
Right, and I was like 5'10", 5'11", something like that back then.
Dude.
But I was only like 170, so I was like...
Oh, you were a tiny gentleman.
I was a spindly, muscly dude.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Back then, I wasn't husky like I am now. But I'm standing there, and he walks right up to the front, walks up to General Norman Schwarzkopf, who's giving the briefing, and he brings everybody to attention as soon as... HW walks into the room. And
now Schwarzkopf did, or
correct.
It just happened automatically?
No, Schwarzkopf did it. He said, attention. And everybody just stood up, and that was it. And I look, and there's HW walking past. And I'm like, holy crap. So we go through the...
I'm like, holy crap.
Right, I'm like, holy crap, that's the president. I was like, shit just got real. What the hell did I get myself into? So I'm sitting there talking and to my squad member. I'm like, you know the president's up there right now. You might as well wake up this time.
Oh!
He's like, I'm not asleep.
in the military.
We hadn't slept in 3 days. And we were looking at a possible 2 days more of, like, maybe an hour sleep. So, yeah, normal shit.
Yeah.
But after the briefing was over, we had 3 hours to get ourselves together before we moved out. And part of that was chow and get our gear ready. So I'm getting chow. I got done eating, and I'm going to square away my gear for the trip out. And here comes President Bush with his cadre of people and Norman Schwarzkopf. And General Schwarzkopf comes over and goes, attention, chemical specs. And I was like, or something along those lines. I remember exactly what he said. I think he called us by our squad name. And he goes, well, sir, this is our chemical specialist. These are the guys that are going to be looking into those weapons of mass destruction that we've been telling you about. That no one believes are over there. That's after the fact.
Okay.
But he came over, and I was squad leader. And he goes, so, you're squad leader, Specialist Michael Mattiacci, correct? And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, well, you know who I am. And I said, sir, yes, I do. And he goes, thank you. He goes, you guys are braver than some of these freaking Marines that I've met today. He goes, you guys are dealing with some of the most dangerous stuff in the world, and you don't even break a sweat. I'm like, sir, I've lost 30 pounds since I've been here.
Jesus
many
Christ.
A sweat. He's like, how long you been here? I'm like, 2 months. And he goes, you've lost 30 pounds in 2 months? He goes, get this man a second lunch. So me and my squad went and got a second meal, and then we got an extra hour to get our stuff together, and then we shipped out. But he sat down and ate with us.
So when he ate,
correct.
Did he talk to you like you were soldiers?
He talked to us like normal people.
Because he was a soldier.
He talked to us like normal human beings.
Okay.
And we talked about the food. He asked where we were from. You know what I
now
mean?
Now, that's so fucking nice. And you would
right.
hope that the president would be that down to earth.
Right, exactly.
And again, he was a Republican, and he was a staunch Republican. And
he loved us. I mean, he loved us. The man hugged me. Like, literally hugged me when we were leaving.
This is a great story, Mike.
We stood up. We were getting done. One of my squad members grabbed this tray. He was like, no. He's like, I got it. And he's like, okay, sir. And he stood up, walked over, put the tray down. We walked out of the cafeteria. And we're standing there looking at each other. And I was like, well, sir, we got to go get our stuff squared away and ready for our mission later on today. And he goes, all right. He goes, you guys be safe. And he hugged me and each one of my squad members, saluted us and walked away.
Aww.
I was like dumbfounded. I was like, guys, I need a couple minutes. I need to go make a phone call right now. And I called my grandfather from the Middle East. And I said, Gramp, I just met Bush. And he went, you kidding me? And I was like, no, I'll send you the Polaroid in my next mail. So my grandfather and grandmother, well, my grandmother somewhere in her big stack of photos has a picture of me and my squad with George Bush.
So how do you feel? Like, so he's passed away, and what's it make
you think? He's gone. He's lived a very long, very meaningful life.
I agree.
And He's now with his wife. I feel good for him.
Now, here's the controversy. And this isn't anything new.
Right.
There's a film that came out, I'm not sure, maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
A year ago, because it's on cable now. And it starred Tom Cruise, and it's called American Made.
Okay.
And it was about Barry Seal, all
right,
who was a TWA pilot at one point, and he got gripped up on the DL from the CIA. And they're like, hey, you want to, like, fly some guns for us to the Nicaraguans? And he was like, yeah. You paying? And they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we're paying. Right? So listen.
That was shit.
It's true, though. So this Barry Seal,
like, hey, we got some guns,
becomes known as the gringo who always delivers. This is what happens. So he takes the guns to Nicaragua.
Right.
I think it's Nicaragua. Sorry if I'm incorrect. I believe that's where it was.
Okay.
And they're like, beat him up and take his sunglasses and take his boots, which they did. So he calls the CIA and he's like, hey, man, they don't want these guns here. They want them with sunglasses, you know? And they're like, listen, we're going to give you more guns. They want them. Just take them the guns. For real.
Right.
So he comes back for another fucking drop-off. And this isn't the film. This is all dramatized. He comes out with a bat. And he's like, get the fuck back. And the
he's got
fucking
a plane full of guns. He's got a base. He's got a Louisville slug.
And the Medellin cartel pulls up. And they're like, put down the bat, Batty. We're all friends here. They're like, listen. They want the cocaine. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, we like it, the guns. See the guns you got there? You bring the guns to Medellin cartel. We'll give you a bunch of cocaine. You bring it back here. And he's like, sure. So the Nicaraguan weapons wind up going to the fucking cartel who needed them.
Right.
And the Nicaraguans just wanted to make money. So like, you got us the cocaine? Yeah, you got me cocaine. Yeah, very good. So they bring the cocaine and he just becomes a fucking runner. And the CIA had given him like land.
Right.
In like the middle of nowhere. And he becomes like $100 million fucking wealthy from just being
holy
the
crap
guy. Yeah. I don't know if you recall this when you were a kid. This is before you were in the service. Ronald Reagan got on TV and he showed photographs one night of Pablo Escobar unloading drugs from a plane.
Okay.
And those pictures were taken by Barry Seal.
That's
for the CIA.
Vaguely familiar.
It was
yeah
a big fucking deal. So as soon as Reagan makes this announcement, oh, this is Pablo Escobar. He is a drug dealer. Well, Pablo knows whose fucking plane it was because he fucking was there.
Right.
They killed Barry.
Oh.
When they kill Barry, Bush's phone number was in his pocket. The then Vice President of the United States of America.
Oh, God.
Now, the CIA has disavowed the existence of this person. They know nothing. We know nothing. We burn everything.
Correct.
But Bush was entrenched in some deep, dark, fucked up scenario.
Well, he was the head of the CIA. You don't get much darker and deeper than that. That's like the soup, aside from the Secret Service.
No, the CIA is way worse.
Well, no. Aside from the Secret Service, where the thing that we think that they do is just protect the president, their role is so much larger in that.
You know what I always blew my mind about the Secret Service?
What?
And we're going to get in trouble maybe for saying this. They're pretty much the hitmen of the government. They pull from every aspect of law enforcement to be
right
a Secret Service agent. If you're a phenomenal state trooper,
mm-hmm,
they'll find you.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, hey, you're pretty hardcore. Want to work for your president? And then you're literally a hitman for the
And you have to be a minimum of 6'2"?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Well, a lot of state troopers until very recently
right
also had a minimum height requirement.
Correct.
So that's like why they would do that. Or you just, you know, you're a weapons expert, you have a degree, you're intelligent.
Right.
They find you. No one applies for the fucking Secret Service. They
no
come out and find you.
Not at all.
And it's a scary, they're kind of the hitmen of the government because
right
they kill without blinking, they don't give a fuck, they don't feel emotion, they're just there to like, and they will die without blinking an eye, that's the
right
thing. It's scary, but like Bush, like Reagan was a Hollywood actor.
Right.
And he was sat on the Tonight Show in the 1970s with Johnny Carson. He says, I am all about smaller government.
Right.
The smaller, the better. Stay out of my fucking business, in other words. And I like that thought.
Right, so do I.
I'm a business owner. I don't want the government. Like, I don't do anything drug-related. I don't ingest. I don't deal. But
right
if I wanted to smoke weed, I should be able to fucking smoke weed.
I feel the same way.
But the
obviously
government is inclined to say, unless we tax it, it doesn't exist. Reagan's whole thing is smaller government.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 1980s, he explodes the country. The government became a world power under his fucking direct leadership.
Right.
And still is. 40 years later. Well, almost. 30
almost
years later.
Yeah.
35 years later. And it's like, I don't know, man. I felt a little ripped off by him. And then there was this political cartoon that I read in the 80s
that showed a giant shadow of Reagan and a little tiny George Bush waving in front of the shadow and the crowd going crazy like, they love me. So the theory was that he was just like Reagan Jr. and that's why he got
fired. I remember there was a lot of that.
He wasn't Reagan Jr. though.
No, he wasn't.
Actually, he was kind of a bad motherfucker. Like, if you're a fucking fighter pilot in World War II, you're a bad motherfucker.
Yes.
Like, for real.
Correct.
And then he's in the CIA. He could kill me with his bare fucking hands. You met him.
Right.
At his age, he was in his 60s at that time.
Slightly intimidating.
Still?
I mean, just for the simple fact that he was our president. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But when we're sitting down talking, he has the look.
The thousand-yard stare?
No, not the thousand-yard stare is when you're just, yeah, well, kind of. But he just has that I'm a hard person look. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen some shit. I've done some shit. You can always tell when you're walking around at base.
His generation survived the fucking...
Depression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my grandparents and people who raised me survived the Depression.
Yeah, same here.
It's a unique fucking outlook. Like, that was a very wealthy man when he passed away last week. He's correct. Very wealthy. Doesn't matter. Like, he got through the fucking Depression, man. Like,
correct.
You don't let that shit go.
No, my grandmother and my grandfather, they taught me how to live the minimalist lifestyle. They said, this is what you need to survive in this world. Yeah. This is what you need to do to make sure you have what you need. And you survive to get through the next day. If you can't figure out how to do this, everything else is going to be unbelievably difficult when it falls apart. So, like, if you're used to nothing but comfort, you're going to have nothing but trouble when you have no comfort.
Now, we're in our 40s.
Right.
It hasn't fallen apart.
Nope.
It hasn't fallen apart since 29. Now, we've had two major stock crashes since 29.
Right.
Neither of which had any implications like 29 did.
Correct.
Because of the safeguards by the government and the insurance policies and the backups and the whole thing.
Right.
Like the FCIA.
FDIC,
that's it. Like, it doesn't happen anymore. Like, you didn't have $1,000 in the bank in 29, and then you wake up the next day and there's like $0.
Right. Like, now, like my account, I had a problem with it a while ago. But nothing like we're saying here where the banks just don't have any more money because exactly. There is none. But like... We have all those safety checks and securities now because of the Great Depression.
I know. So my point being is that there's a very good chance we're going to die through our life at the end and never, ever, ever comprehend anything like our grandparents dealt with.
Correct.
Any capacity. And now here's the thing. Here's how you know I'm getting old, right? And we're going down another fucking rabbit hole. I apologize, listeners, to episode number 36 of the Vex and Vex podcast. This is what happens when Magnus and myself sit down.
It happens.
It gets fucking weird.
It's a thing.
The people... They're calling them the millennials.
Yes.
This is how you know I'm old. I look at them and I'm like, oh, God. Now, I remember being 18 and I was a jerk off. Now, I didn't think I was a jerk off, but I was a jerk off.
Oh, I know I was.
And I had some people hire me and they gave me opportunities and they taught me how business works and how you show up and you have to work hard. And like, I learned.
Right.
And I believe in my heart, I sincerely do, the millennials will also learn. They're just learning at a slower curve than we did and that our parents did, because people aren't moving out till they're 25, 26 years old. Now, I'm in the throes of a divorce right now.
Right.
It fucking sucks.
Grr.
She's in her early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my early 40s. So that's a big fucking gap.
Right.
Her little brother still lives at home.
Wow.
And I don't think he has a job right now. And he has a much newer car than I do. And I think his parents are probably paying for that car. And he's a good guy and I love him. I do. I'm not going to know him anymore because this divorce is happening. But he's a millennial. And it's a different mindset that I just could never wrap my head around. Like, it's just different.
I've seen the two sides of the millennials. My son's a millennial. My oldest son, Nick.
Technically, sure, yeah.
Correct. He's 26 years old, going on 27 this year coming up.
Which I think is about the same age as this person I'm talking about.
Right. And a friend of mine, he has a girlfriend that he's had for the last 10 years. She has a 26-year-old son. Never had a girlfriend. Completed school by homeschooling. And sits at home and plays video games to the point where the other day he was probably 3 months ago, his mom got a phone call from him when we were hanging out one night at the bar.
Sure.
And he goes, "Mom, I'm hungry. Could you come home and make me some food?
Fucking shitting me."
He doesn't know how to cook. He's 26 years old and doesn't know how to do anything except throw something in the microwave. He doesn't even know how to use a stove. Like, I don't know what happened there.
But no, but how does one allow that scenario to grow up in your household?
I don't know. And it's not like she's got, like, 8 kids and one fell through the cracks. She's got 2. You know
what
I'm saying?
Actually, let's discuss this. So now that I'm looking into the dating pool, because my life is radically different, I really thought I was going to die with this person, and I was going to be done. I need to just bang in the mic. Don't worry about it, bro. It's a podcast.
Don't do it.
Well, no, I'm looking into the dating pool.
Okay, do it.
Okay, I don't know what you're saying. You're confusing me.
The dating pool, do it.
Yeah, so I'm trying to talk about that.
I know.
Whispering.
I don't understand human being four people. Hi, I'm 36 years old. I'm a mother of four children. What the fuck? Like, I have zero children. Like, for real. Like, and it was intentional. I think I wanted one. I still might want one, actually. I don't know what's going to happen. Because, yeah, hey, mathematically, it's impossible. I'm a man. You know what I mean? But I can't fathom. I meet someone like, oh, I have five kids. What the fuck? I met a girl.
Right.
And I, you know, we were talking about going to dinner and stuff. And then I met her and we had a meal. And she's like, oh, I have five kids. And she was really pretty. She really was. She was in the military. She had a great body. And I stopped. I was like, five? And she's like, oh, yeah, they kind of take care of themselves at this point.
Right.
No! No! Like, fucking five?
Right.
Like, okay, you get knocked up. I get it. You get knocked up. Maybe you're 18. Maybe you're 19. Okay, I had a child. I might, air quotes, I might forgive a second mistake, right?
Right.
Five fucking times in 2018? No. I know. I got to tell you, I don't know how many females listen to the Vex on Vex podcast. The circulation's getting better. On the TV Dads Wrestling podcast, gets over 5,000 listeners a week.
Wow.
Someone told me that this podcast is going to surpass that soon.
Oh, wow.
Which would be nice. I have no idea how many of them are females. I really don't. They're probably just a bunch of guys because we talk about guy shit. Fucking Star Wars. You know? Like, yeah.
Darth Vader, exactly. Baby.
But five fucking children?
Yeah.
Number one, what does your vaginal cavity look like? There's not enough Kegels in the world to repair five fucking passages. Like I remember, like, my mother, who is older from the Great Depression. She was my great aunt. She raised me. Her generation had seven kids, nine kids.
Because
A, it's hard to pull out when you're drunk.
True.
Which is my family was definitely that. And B, contraceptives wasn't a thing.
No.
The pill didn't exist. And then it went down to, like, normal numbers. Like, the baby boomers didn't have seven fucking siblings.
No, it was like two or three.
But today, it boggles my mind. Who the fuck has four or five human
beings?
I
just mentioned it's not like she's got eight kids. I know a woman who's in her early 30s right now that has eight children.
Why do you know her? I wouldn't even talk to her. I'd be like, what the fuck?
She's an associate of somebody that I know. It's not like I know her personally and I spend time with her.
I don't understand. Like, there's like, we get told in the press, I don't know how realistic it is, in sincerity, we're overpopulating.
Yes.
India's overpopulating.
Yes.
There's a lot of fucking stuff.
India's been overpopulating for like centuries.
Who needs to make five people?
I don't know.
I have weighed the weight. I've weighed the weight. I have carried the burden of, oh, should I have a child?
Right.
My entire adult life, I've been very careful. I've done things. I know the plumbing works because there was
a couple incidents.
One, actually.
Okay.
We had a vacuum cleaner situation.
Right.
I think I discussed this with you last time.
Maybe.
The point is, I know the plumbing works, but I've been very, very meticulous and careful. I've toured. I should have knocked up somebody.
At some point. Might have.
But I was very... No, I was very careful. And okay. I always follow up and I take the shit seriously. My point is, I can't imagine any person making that many children. It melts my fucking brain. Why?
Well, I have three. I have three boys.
I didn't even know that. I thought it was just two, to be honest with
you. No, I have three.
So what are their ages?
27, 21 as of the 31st, and 19.
Are they all the same mother?
No, two different mothers.
So, yeah. See,
the oldest is a secular with one woman. And
what's
then
a secular? What?
As in singular. Instead of, it was a one-off with that woman.
So you had a one-night stand and you made a person?
No, well, no, it wasn't. Okay, that's another interesting Army story. I was about to leave for the Gulf and didn't know if I was going to be coming back alive. It was December of 1990, and I talked to my girlfriend of the last year and a half and said, let's make a baby. I don't know if I'm coming home.
This is a 1940s, let me get laid before I go to war story.
Oh, I was getting laid regardless. I was just like, can I pull out or should I stay in there? Yeah, like, should I go for it or should I not?
And, like, I remember, so I was more afraid of getting a woman pregnant than contracting an STD when I was a child. Like, when I was a teenager.
I was worried about both.
I was like, well, I was really Captain Trojan, man. I was
so old. Was I.
And then I was like, well, you know, you read up on herpes and the situation at that, and like it's if the woman has it inflamed, she can pass it. There's,
right.
But sex isn't supposed to be comfortable when they're inflamed, so things like that nature. But back then, it was all covered in hair.
Couldn't see shit.
Yeah, and I don't know, man.
It was like 2001 before I saw what it actually looked like.
No, in the 90s, I started experiencing random girls who were shaved. I remember dating a girl for an extended period of time because when I got her clothes off, it was perfectly shaved. I was like, ooh.
And I didn't like her per se, but she was cute and she had a great body and all. But I just liked that it was like that, and then it became like a criteria. I'd be like, hey,
how you doing?
Do you like shave?
You like? And then they're like, going on down
they're
there?
Like, I trim, and I'm like, no, I didn't ask you if it trimmed.
Right.
Do you shave?
Right. It's like if it doesn't go buzz.
Like I've been shaving my nuts for fucking 20 years at this point.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah. Like it's fucking like turtle shell down there. Like it's awesome. But it's like, I don't know, man. Five fucking people you've made. Like, I can't even fathom it. Like, the websites and the apps. I'm just going to go out to bars and just meet people. And hopefully they don't have five fucking children. Because for real, I can't handle it.
No, at this point, in this world and at this point in your life, five children, not a good idea.
I can't imagine, like, one's a lot. I don't even know. Like, so I'm getting divorced.
Right.
And she has a kid, and I really like the kid. I'm never going to see him again, Mike. Like,
I know.
I'm never going to, and I it's okay. I know that. I'm not, believe me, I'm not crying over it. But I did like him.
Right.
And we have a bond. And for 4 years, this is like, you know, my kid kind of.
Right.
This fucking. And I remember, I don't know. The point is, I can't. I'm. What's the word? The adjective of choice. I am looking at the dating pool as an uphill fucking mountain that I don't even want to deal with. Like.
I know what you mean. Sitting at the base of the mountain, looking up, going, fuck.
And like. Every single one of my God, I've had three marriages, Mike. Three marriages. The first one dies, doesn't count.
Right.
I should have stayed with her. She died on me. I didn't want her to die. It happens, right?
Right.
Bad luck. The second one was a really awesome girl. I fucked it up. I'm a musician. Shit like that happens.
Shit happens.
Third one, I was totally good. And she fucked it up. And she did the naughty stuff.
Right.
And then I... anyway, my point is, I'm done marriage, man. Three and I'm out. Three strikes, I'm out. I'm done with that shit.
I haven't married yet. Even though I've had two different babies' mamas, I never got to the point where we got married.
Like, dude, I'm multiple rings deep.
Right.
Like, my first...
You're like Sonic.
The first diamond ring was $16,500.
Holy crap.
I loved her. I adored her. She married me first. We eloped in Vegas while I was on tour in California.
Holy crap.
We had, like, a few days off. We flew to Vegas. We got married. And she was awesome. Right. So, when we finally came back home and everything settled down, I bought her a ring. Her mother went with me. I went to a fucking jeweler, $16,500 in cash. I paid for that motherfucker. She dies. The mother took the ring. And I was not going
to
sell the ring.
Right.
But it was my fucking ring.
Right.
And so that was upsetting. So whatever. And then
probably
the second,
more than likely the mom sold it.
No. She was a millionaire.
Oh, okay. She just wanted to keep it.
Exactly.
Right.
But not the fucking point. It was my fucking ring. And my wife, you know?
And yeah, I could get that.
Second marriage, her grandmother bought us the ring. Like, we went, we picked it out, we put it on layaway, and the grandma paid it off, which was really classy and really nice of her. And I cool. So I didn't lose anything on that one. A couple $100, I think, for the deposit. And then the last one, I paid fucking cash, and I went out, and I fucking hunted it down, and she wanted a very specific cut, and it was perfect. You know what I mean? God damn it. She stole that ring back from my bedroom recently. Like, when we broke up, air quotes, she gives it back, right? And then she fucking, I the other day, like, I just go through the drawer in my bedroom, which she's not allowed to enter. Like, we're still, we're in this fucking barrage of a divorce. She just took the ring back. And I don't want it, per se. I feel like she hocked it.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
But moving forward.
But here's my point. Now I gotta start all over.
Right.
I'm an old man. Like, I gotta be like, hey, I'm in a band.
See, here's the thing, though. It's not like you're jumping out there and you've just gotten out of rehab. It's not like you're jumping out there and you're trying to rebuild your whole life after a messy divorce or breakup or something
like
that.
That's exactly what's happening. What are you talking about?
But you still have your business.
Yes.
You're going to have your house.
Yes.
Your band's still here.
Your band's good.
Your band is good.
It's a good band.
Starscream. Listen to them.
Yeah, well, new record coming soon.
January.
Yes.
Anyway, so you've already got all them steps accomplished. There's people that come out of relationships and fall into shelters and rehabs and prison.
You know, I'll tell you this. This is how you know I'm a fortunate human being.
Right.
If I was to happen to have fucked up and lost my big house, I would just move into my little house.
Right.
Like, that's a nice sentence. You're
correct.
Like, well, I did like my big
house. And you're asking me why I want to buy the house on Ashton Road and then possibly move up to out to Olympia, Washington. So that way I have that house in case things screw up out there. I can just go, I'm just going home.
As a human being that pays taxes on two houses in the city of Philadelphia? No. No.
Taxes on that house up there are actually pretty cheap. They're under $2,000 a year.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually.
That's what I'm saying. It's not that horrible.
No, but it's still like, I don't know, if we're going to discuss your personal business, sure, what the fuck, we'll discuss it.
I don't care. It's just money. It's not anything
real. And you know what?
It's just real. I mean, you can literally go online, put my address in, and find out what the taxes are for the house.
You know what I think about sometimes now that we're getting older?
I'm going to be like in my 60s before I know it, because I was in my 20s 5 minutes ago and now I'm in my 40s. No, for real, right? So 60s are coming fast. And,
yeah.
And so I'm saving, I'm putting away the whole thing, right? I'm a business owner, so I don't have a retirement plan mm-hmm. or a pension. I have property, I can sell things. But I don't want to be like 65 years old going, well, I'm going to live off this cat food, you know, and
right.
keep roofing and stuff. So I don't know. Like, I've been thinking about the future a little bit. But then there's another part. I saw this episode of Shark Tank last night, actually. Right. And in the episode, there was this woman, and she was like, my husband and I graduated college debt-free because we got, like, scholarships, and we mm-hmm. worked full-time through college. We bought our first house. We had more than half to put down. Our mortgage is not, and we don't have any credit card debt, and we saved $50,000 in cash.
Wow.
So we have money put away. And she was, like, 35 or something. So she really hustled.
That's good.
And they were, like, and Mark Cuban praised her. He was like, you're really good. Like, you know what I mean? You're hustling. You're building. You're doing without.
Right.
Towards your future. And then I thought about that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
We're all a car crash away from not being alive.
Correct.
I'm not going to not have cable and watch the Eagles on television, which is $200 a month, roughly, or a little less for like cable and internet and all that bullshit, to just be like, well, when I'm 60, I don't know, man. You got to treat yourself a little bit.
Right.
I don't know.
Tomorrow's not promised.
That's the thing. And it's right. like, I'm saving, but I'm not hurting for anything. Like, I'm pretty fortunate. I have a motorcycle. It's paid off. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a happy guy. Like, I don't have a lot of bills. My mortgage is sucky.
Yeah. Mortgages always suck.
And I tried to avoid having it. This house we're recording in right now is the little house. It's
right.
the band house. It's paid for. And I paid for it, you know, in cash. So I had this house.
Yeah, first house I bought, I got from HUD, I paid for cash.
There you go. And then my second house I inherited from my family when they passed away. And then I had two properties with no mortgages, which I liked.
Right.
And the second wife was like, oh, we need a bigger house. And I got to be honest, I love where I live. I love where I live.
Yeah,
I do.
The area of Philly where you're in is actually really nice.
Really nice.
I do like that up there.
Good area. I love the house.
Right.
I love everything about it. I do. But I don't like paying all that fucking money every month. But then, yeah. No. My second wife's uncle, when we had gotten married, told me something when we were going to buy the house. He's like, listen, you're locking yourself into this mortgage, and it's X amount of dollars a month. But he's like, in 10 years, it'll still be that amount of money, but you'll be making so much more because you get older and you get
right.
better. And he's right. So I don't even think about the mortgage anymore. It's just a thing. I'd rather keep the money. But I am paying towards it. So, but now there's no children. I have no siblings. When
right.
I die, who's going to get it? The guy, my vice president of my company gets my house? Like, what's going to happen now?
You know. Have friends.
Ah!
I mean, honestly.
I'm going to outlive all of you, you bastards.
You know
just
funny,
so we're clear.
You know what the funny thing is? That's very interesting that you bring it up, because I've had this same conversation and thoughts with a couple other people.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend Artie, who passed away in 2016, whose house I live in now.
Yes.
Him and I had this conversation a lot. He has a son, two stepkids, a wife, his mom, his mother-in-law, all living underneath one roof. And I was working with him to get his will squared away so everybody got what they needed, and I didn't have to deal with what I'm dealing with right now, which is a will that left everything to his mom 15 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. His wife and kids weren't even in the in his life when he wrote that will up. He left everything to his mom, his paintball equipment to me, and his electrical business to his partner. That was it.
That's not, I don't know. Well,
the house went to his mom, though, and with the stipulation that if anything happened to him and it was just him and mama still living in the house, I moved into the house and took care of her.
I'm with you, but you lost me, so what's the point you're telling me?
There's always somebody that you care about that you can leave the stuff that you have here behind.
The stuff.
I mean, if it's something as big as a house, sell the house, have the money sent to charity or something.
I was
like that.
Thinking I was going to sell everything soon. Not soon, but in a couple years, and
right.
go to Hawaii. Think about
it. I can't
it.
Argue that.
Harley, houses.
And honestly, I wouldn't mind having a friend in Hawaii to go out and hang with. I'm
music
just saying.
Equipment. Like,
yes.
I have stuff.
Yes.
So if I just sell all my stuff and I get a big pile of money, I'm just going to go to fucking Hawaii. Like, I'm surfing.
That's kind of where I am right now.
Really?
Like, I'm kind of on that walk the earth kung fu type thing.
See,
minus
I'm not that.
No. Minus the whole being broken kung fu artist type thing. But I kind of want to get out and see other places. I've lived up and down the eastern seaboard.
Okay.
Majority of my adult life. I've been from Alabama all the way up to Maine and back to Philadelphia again several times. And all the way down to Texas, San Antonio twice. I've been to the West Coast couple times for a visit, vacation-ish type stuff. I like it. And I think Olympia, Washington is absolutely gorgeous.
Have you done the Hollywood thing?
I was in L.A. for 6 hours. I went to an In-N-Out Burger with my buddy. We're standing there on the side of the building on, like, this little thing that they got set up for you to stand outside and eat. There's tables and stuff. And this little gangbanger comes up to me and goes, "We don't like people that look like you." I'm like, "I'm sorry, I didn't know I had a certain look that brought on angst." And he goes, "I don't even know what that word means." And next thing I know, two of his boys are there trying to fight with me and my buddy. And I'm like, "All right, so take me back to the airport. I'm going home." That was horrible.
Aww.
So I spent 8.5 hours in L.A. and left.
Starscream spent a few months in L.A. over the years.
Oh, God.
Because we'd go out there for like a month, do a bunch of shows, come back. Over the years, like a couple of months. And every single time, I'm like, I just want to go home. if the weather's great.
Right.
The driving's atrociously awful.
Yes, it is.
It's the absolute worst. And the fakeness of everyone in the industry that you deal with.
Correct.
It's just nauseating. On the East Coast, you know exactly where the fuck you stand.
Right.
And sometimes they're rude. And sometimes it's not the best. But you know where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people just say crazy, obscene, insane lies to my face in California. And I'm just looking at me like, yeah, okay. And then you never see them again. And you're like, what the fuck? Why? Why did you just lie to me for no reason? Like, there's, how do I say this? Actors, man. I've definitely complained about actors before. I'm a horrible C actor, by the way. I am on IMDb.com. I exist.
Oh, no.
I'm in a few films.
Okay.
For real. I'm not good at it or anything, but I look menacing when I'm wearing a mask, which is pretty much that's what it comes down to. Do you go to the gym and
lead singer Slipknot coming up?
No, he's much shorter than I am. Yeah. But anyway.
He is tiny.
He is very tiny. And I'm not. No. So, at any rate, the Hollywood thing, the actors, like, I dated, the girl with the shaved vagina was an actress. The first one, like from the 90s.
Obviously.
And she went to college here, and then she moved out there, and she became a booking agent for Starscream for quite a while.
Nice.
But no one lied to me more to my face or easier. Like, she could just, like, look you right in the eye and just lie, because she's an actress, and that's what they're trained
to do. That's what they do. Yeah.
So when you go out there and you meet all of them, it's just horrible. And I had a girlfriend, the girl who lived in this house we're in right now with me in 2007.
Right.
She moved to California because she's a graphic artist, and it's either go to New York or go to California.
Right.
And she kind of wanted to stay together, but I was like, I threw a tantrum, like, "You want to leave? We're breaking up." Right. She was cool. No, it happens. So she moved away. We stayed friendly and stuff. I haven't spoken to her in years, but she didn't like it, and she moved back home. But then the industry sent her back again, and she now is in, I believe, in California again. But she would get drunk and like call me at like 3 o'clock in the morning, leave me a voicemail like, "LA is so fake. I hate it. I hate it so much. Everyone's a liar. It's so bad." Like, so that's our situation. If you're East Coast raised and you wind up on the West Coast, especially in the Hollywood region, it's a very fucking placid environment.
Yes, it is.
I met Andrew Dice Clay at the fucking Tower Records.
Out in L.A.?
Yeah, he was with his kids. He was fat at the time. He was like pudgy. He was like, I say,
he wasn't always, he wasn't like thin. You know what I mean?
No, now he's like fucking thin. I follow him on Instagram. He's like, got a comeback and he's like healthy. He was like a stay-at-home dad. Because his like wife bounced or some shit, and it was just him and the kids.
That's not bad. So he did a Rick Moranis.
No, well, Rick Moranis' wife died.
Right. Well, basically same thing. He stopped his career to take care of his family.
I don't know. I feel like the dice was run off a little bit, to be honest with you. Like, do you remember when he was like the biggest thing ever in the 80s?
Yeah.
And then Ford Fairlane came out.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't do well. It like bombed. And then he did like the Brain Smasher movie in like 95. It was really over by then. And it was just over.
Well, them. I guess I don't think the word is bit comic, but somebody who has like a shtick, as it were, and their comedic thing with him, where it was so exaggerated that once you do a certain amount of content, it just becomes boring after that.
I don't know if it's that or he was so big and so overexposed for a brief time, and then the actual media had a huge backlash against him. He was like shot in the foot. And he had a short-lived sitcom in the 90s. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Vaguely.
He was kind of like, I think he was a post office worker or something. Oh. It was weird. It was the woman, the love interest from Raging Bull. Helen Moriarty or something. I don't know where her first name is. It was interesting. So he's reinvented himself. And he's in A Star Is Born this year. He was in a TV show called Vinyl. He had a phenomenal part in a Woody Allen movie about 4 or 5 years ago.
Wow.
He's a great actor, actually.
No, he is a good actor.
And if you see him in A Star Is Born, it's so, like, perfect.
But, like Ford Fairlane, that was just basically Andrew Dice Clay as Ford Fairlane. You know what I mean? That was the same character that just changed the name.
But then, I don't even know if you know this, but he was on fucking Different Strokes. He was a regular character in Different Strokes. You don't remember that, do you? He was, like, the high school bully for Willis.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and he was in love with Kimberly. He's like, hey, how you doing? Hey.
Yeah, I remember that.
So he's been around a minute. I love me some anodized clay. Now, the beauty of anodized clay is that he's exaggerating what it's like to be old dice.
Oh, God.
No, but it's great. He has white hair. He has giant glasses like an old Jewish guy, because he is an old Jewish guy. And he's like, hey, I don't know. I'm dice. Hey. Like, it's fucking great.
He's from New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And he was his stick was an Italian guy. He's a Jewish guy. Same thing.
Right.
I like dice. Who's your favorite comedian?
George Carlin.
Yeah. Mine's Pryor, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
He was funny. I did like him. I'm not saying I don't like him. He was definitely funny. It was just that I didn't relate to his comedy. You know, for me, I need to relate to something. For
well, Mike,
kind of funny.
This color doesn't wash off.
No, it doesn't.
So I get it. Okay, right. I get Pryor. No, I'm just kidding. Carlin was probably the most...
X is white.
Multicolored, actually, if you want to get fucking technical.
We're all from Philly. We're all multiracial.
No. I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and I'm every color of the rainbow.
Oh, well, that's
on
different.
Both arms.
You're tattooed.
I'm multicolored.
Right.
Listen, I identify as a multicolored species. No, I don't know what I'm saying.
That's right.
Yeah, like...
Identify as a cucumber.
Oh, seedless. Do you ever watch Rick and Morty?
No.
Pickle Rick is the greatest episode ever.
Okay.
And I might make you watch that, because it's that fucking good.
I'm afraid.
No, it's just fucking brilliant. It's so brilliant. It's my favorite show right now. At any rate... Carlin was the most prolific comedian probably ever.
He was.
Every single year, he wrote a brand new hour.
Yes.
Which is more or less impossible.
Not for him.
I know. But it's a very tough act to follow.
Right.
Every year.
Well, it was him was the top tier for me. Carlin was my dad and I sat down and watched George Carlin on VHS for years together.
Sure.
Then for me, right after that, was Eddie Murphy.
Really?
Yeah, Eddie Murphy I found ridiculously stupid funny.
You know, we went to lunch before this podcast.
Yes.
We ran into a very long-lost cousin of mine that I had not seen in decades.
Correct.
Who recognized me, which I find bizarre, because when I was 3, I looked radically different from 43. So, but she knew exactly who the fuck I was. She's like, hey! And I'm like, hey. That's weird.
True.
We brought out my father, because that was her uncle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't raise me. He was an alcoholic. He died very early, very young. But the one thing I remember is I had a quote, air quotes, dad weekend where I'd go to his house where he's hammered and my people who raised me would drop me off and hang out with him. And he put in Eddie Murphy Delirious. I was 8. No. It was amazing.
I know.
It was so amazing.
I wasn't much older. I mean, there's only what? You're 3 years younger than me, correct? Yeah. So I'm 46. You're 40. Yeah, okay.
43. So.
Right. So yeah, I was 16 when it came out, maybe.
No, I was not 13 when that came out. That came out 83.
Oh.
I was 8, so you were 11.
Okay, then I watched it when I was probably about 14 with my dad.
I saw it when I was fucking 8 because my dad bought the VCR tape, and he puts it in, and he's hammered. He's hammered. And I sit down, and he's like, don't tell your family that I'm letting you watch this. You know?
Oh, my God.
It was so brilliant. Belly laughs.
I'm sure you lost it just like I did on Goonie Goo Goo.
Oh, my God. No, the whole thing. And this is weird. I didn't remember this until pretty recently. When I was a little kid, I memorized Bill Cosby himself.
Oh, God.
And no one comprehended I was memorizing it. And then I went to a family function, and I met, new people. And I just did the fucking shtick. I stood up, and I was like, hi, I'm Bill Cosby. Oh, and no. I'm not drugging you.
Jeffrey.
Blue water.
No, Jeffrey, the kid on the plane.
The blue water. I just said it. The kid on the plane, he invites Jeffrey into the bathroom to play with the blue water. Remember the punchline?
Yes, that was, the end of it.
Yes.
Where's the blue water?
The blue water. So yeah. I invite you into the bathroom,
because
Jeffrey, driving another crazy. I started doing the shtick. And I remember my mother looking at me, and she was laughing. So, I had delivery, I had the timing. Now, I couldn't write jokes. I was fucking, 6 or 5 or something.
But you could repeat it and get the feel.
And I just remember, I was like, I can do this in front of people thing.
Oh, no.
Well, now here I am, though. I don't want to be a stand-up comedian, per se. You know what I want to do eventually, for real?
What?
Have you ever seen any footage of Rollins when he does his thing?
Yes.
I want to do that.
I've actually gone to a couple of his, spoken word
you
things.
You did it?
Yes.
How was it?
Interesting. Each one was completely and utterly different than the other.
And they're supposed to be.
They are. They have a completely different feel, theme, and he's even completely different during them, too.
I watched a lot of them online.
Right.
He's always lighthearted and funny. They're not heavy.
No.
He's not like Jim Morrison, had the whole poetry thing, and it was real heavy. And I remember being broody in 15, Jim Morrison, man, I get it, man. And now, I'm way older than Morrison was when he died, right?
Mm-hmm.
Morrison was very well-read, and he was very intelligent, but he was self-destructive, obviously, and could have used some fucking therapy, and he's fucking dead because he fucking drank too much, literally. And I like idolized him as a kid. Now I feel bad. And then like I used to adore Sid Vicious. Like when I was like 18 years old, I'm like, fucking Sid Vicious, man. Awful bass player, which is upsetting. Because I didn't.
Well, I mean, he was playing punk. It wasn't like
No, actually. Glenn Matlock played the punk. All the records are Glenn Matlock.
Right.
He quits because they said fuck on TV, and he was like, "All right, I'm out." You didn't even know that, did you?
No.
And they fill it. They bring Sid in because he was Johnny Rotten's best friend.
Right.
He couldn't play bass, and they're just like, "All right, you stand there, mate. You look alright. Let's learn the bass here." And then he became a junkie with the fucking girl who's from my neighborhood, actually.
Really?
Yeah, you never heard that? Sid Nancy, mm-hmm. The whole thing, Nancy Spongin. She's from Northeast Philadelphia.
Really?
We named an EP in the 90s. King Sam and I were in a band called The Broken, not Starscream, but back then it was called The Broken.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned them before.
I think our second EP was called Nancy, after Nancy Spongin. Because I had just read the book, I Don't Want to Live This Life, which her mom wrote.
Right.
And like they're talking about Red Lion Road and Bustleton Avenue. That's where the fuck I live. So it's like, oh, Nancy Spongin. So at any rate, when I find out Sid Vicious is a shitty musician and just a junkie, it breaks my heart. And then you read, you go to documentaries and shit, or you see them, and I feel really bad for these characters. Like, Sid was exploited by the fucking management and the whole thing. Like, it's kind of sad. His version of My Way, though, is still kind of breathtaking. Gives me chills to this day. Have you ever heard it?
No.
You never heard his version of My Way?
Like, I was not into punk when I was younger or even now.
You're like, I still don't like it.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I just said I wasn't into it, so it wasn't, like, my main thing. Like, I know a lot of Kiss, but I don't like Kiss.
You know, Rollins had a thing about that. He doesn't like Kiss either, right?
Right.
He went to the concert. He's like, I knew every fucking song. You don't know how you know every song.
Yeah, I was the same way. It's like I would sit down and listen. I could sing the songs. I knew them and stuff like that. But I never owned any Kiss shirts or albums or tapes or 8-tracks or stone tablets. Back when they were, being used as records.
Were they? Bear with us, listening public. Hold on a second. All right, Mike, you ready?
Yes.
This is long. The beginning's shitty, but it gets really good. And the reason I know about this version is it's in the end of Goodfellas.
Really?
I don't know if you remember that.
No.
There's a scene where Tommy, it's not Tommy, it's the fucking actor, is shooting at the screen at the end of the movie, and they play this song. Not this part, though. I love it.
The final curtain.
Sid Vicious.
Sounds like Dracula.
Yes! Because he couldn't sing.
No.
And he's all smacked out. And there's a video, and he's all smacked out in the video. Like, it's. I kind of want to remake this video.
And every highway.
Are you ready?
Yes.
It's coming.
I don't think I am.
You're gonna like it, actually. And this is the end of Goodfellas. They play this.
I remember this.
So I track down who it is. I'm like, who's this? I love this fucking song, eh?
Oh, God. Is this the Kinks?
No.
It's the B-52s.
Oh, I love Sid Vicious. I So that's the gist of it.
Okay, the pickup after the intro it's good. I like it like that.
It's a punk tune,
Right, but seriously, it was like Vlad the Impaler singing the intro.
Man.
Bah, I did it my way.
I remember reading about like Vlad as a child.
Right.
And then this is so weird. You just give me like a chill. I'm going to tell this story. I don't give a fuck.
Uh-oh.
My family got like a VCR in like 82 or 83. It was like cutting edge technology at the time. And a video store opened up right down the street from where we're actually taking this podcast. It was on Richmond Street.
Right.
It was the only video fucking store for like miles upon miles, right?
Right.
You could go and you could rent videos. And there was a thing for Vlad the Impaler, a cartoon. And so my parents rent it because they're like, he'll love it. Yo, it was dark, man.
Yeah, I've seen it. I think I owned it.
Like, I learned about how he put them on fucking spikes in front of his house. He's like, it was a love story. I'm Vladimir, but I must tell you, I do express myself. They did not know my power. And you're like, oh my fucking God. And I'm like six. And I'm like, oh, amazing. So he's pretty, the Dracula fucking backstory.
I actually met somebody that is directly related to him.
I don't believe that shit. They're a liar.
No, I don't believe it. He's from Transylvania. He's a friend of my friend John and Trina.
No,
what the hell's his name?
Pennsylvania, and you got confused.
No. He's actually, he was born and raised in Transylvania. He came here when he was like 9, so he still has the accent.
Hello.
What the hell is his name again?
Get the fuck out of here.
It's some...
Because if I'm from Transylvania, right, and I'm in America, every girl I meet, I'm like, I'm related to Vlad the Impaler.
He probably does.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's not really fucking related to Dracula, but no, he's from Transylvania, so of course he's going to claim it.
Well, no, he's Lexi. It's short for some long...
it's Lexicon, that would be fucking amazing.
That would be great, but he goes by Lexi, I think.
Dude,
I'm not sure.
We've surpassed an hour, and I really... Hold on. I really wanted to talk about more about President Bush.
I know. We go in these tangents.
Oh, I know. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 36 of the Vex on Vex podcast. This has been Magnus.
Yes.
Hanging out with VexX. And there's a new record from Starscream coming out in January. It's called Weapons. We're very excited about it. There'll be a new video also probably in January. Maybe February for editing. And thank you for listening. We're available on the Podbean application on your phone on the Loud and Loaded Network. Tune in for more episodes, and we love you dearly. This is VexX telling you to stay frosty.